Well, hello and welcome to Inexos Access All Areas. My name is Bea and I will be co-hosting this series of podcasts with my Inexos nerd Hayden Murdoch. We will be delving deep with you all to explore everything there is to know about this iconic band of brothers Inexos, sharing music, tours, videos, albums and oh so much more.
Well, hello, welcome to Inexos Access All Areas, episode 179, the podcast that aims to dive deep in all things great about our favourite band, doing it always with a bunch of compadres and patrons and listeners around the world, and most importantly, doing it with Bea. Hello, how are you? Haven't seen you for a while.
Hello, I'm glad you can still find the introduction quite easily, even after a couple of weeks off.
It rolled off pretty good, didn't it?
It did, yes. I was very impressed then.
You don't pre-record that stuff at all.
No.
I just get into an ad-lib as we go. So, but yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since we spoke and stuff like that. How have you been? How's your sort of Inexos 2 weeks been, Bea?
Well, I went to see John Stevens and I got into the green room.
You did?
I did, and he jumped up as soon as he saw me and ran across the room to me, and I went, oh, you know who I am? He goes, yeah, you're Deb. Oh, so I went, oh.
Yeah.
I went, no, I'm not Deb. Oh, damn. Anyway, so we got speaking. He was really nice, nicer than I thought he was going to be, and got my phone. He was taking selfies of us, and he like got kissed on the cheek, which was nice. I told him who we were, and I said, I'm trying to get you on the show. And I said, and I was told you didn't want to come on. He goes, I do. They can't tell me what to do.
All right, okay.
You email me and I'll come on the show. And then he says, please pass on my love to the boys. I absolutely adore them. And that just was just perfect.
Now, did our friend from Canada, Kath T, did she make it to the gig with you? Or she
No. Fly? Yeah, she had to fly away back to cold Canada. So hello to Kathy.
Yes. And thanks for your time in Australia, Kath. Hope you had a great time, and sending you heat waves from Victoria and Melbourne. But you know, we've had 38 degrees 3 days in a row here in March, which is autumn or fall, as our North American listeners would call it. Yeah. But stinking hot down here. But yeah, it's been a pretty sort of Indian summer for us coming late.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been very humid here, very tropical. I even saw that some of John Stevens's group or his band were saying that it's too hot in Coffs Harbour and too humid in the tropics.
Well, he's the hardest working man in Australian show business because he's been doing Noiseworks gigs at the same time. He's been doing the John Stevens gigs, and then he's been doing the Noiseworks festival gigs with even Cheap Trick. I don't know if you saw his...
Yeah.
The gang from Cheap Trick and I think Ice House and a few others and things, and they've been doing the festival circuit as well. So he's been probably having to change up his set list a little bit on things. I did see a Noiseworks fan in the street the other day, very proudly wearing his 1987 Noiseworks t-shirt that had been obviously reprinted and recalibrated. And I said, I didn't get to the Forum gig. Do they play any new songs? Oh, yeah, they played heaps of songs. Yeah, I love John Stevens. What new songs they play? Oh, yeah, plenty of the first two albums. He wasn't too literate about the depth of the catalogue, so... But he did say they're touring again at the Forum in a couple of weeks. So hopefully that's true and I might get to see them down here, Bea.
Yeah, it was good. I should actually tell you about the concert. The concert was actually. Yeah, so he'd play one Inexos song and then he'd play one Noiseworks song. So it was pretty good. And I was bouncing around and even fist pumped me as well, which from the audience. So he's pretty hands-on. Oh, God. And he just really, you can tell he's really enjoying it. He enjoyed getting the feedback from the fans as well. So do please, if you're over here in Australia and you can get to see John Stevens, go see him.
Yeah, we do know it's been a little bit of a gap between sort of recordings, but we did our Mark Pallington sort of double episode.
How good was that?
We had a few technical malfunctions, but we eventually got episode two out, and no thanks to Soundtrap, who completely let you down, Bea. But I did love the promotional stuff you put together with the phone call as our advertorial for episode two. A lot of fun. Again, Mark's going to champion the band's cause from over there, and just so happened, as you do know, that Inexos management bumped into Mark at the Super Bowl.
Yes.
It's funny how all these things sort of come together.
Just bumped into each other.
Correct. And he said to them that, you know, we were on the show and enjoyed it. And that led to a couple other things, which we'll talk about later. But B, there's an interesting statistic I should share. That, well, I'm sharing back to you because you shared with me before we came on today. But I believe we are 7 listeners away from 10,000, and we might need to shout out to an old friend to help us get to 10,000. So over to our old friend.
I'd like to say hello to everybody outside on the highway. Let's all say hello to everybody outside. It's about 10,000 people at least. Hello.
Well, hello to our honorary members, Tim Farris, Nick Eakin, Mark Opitz, Richard Simpkin, Cameron Adams, Mary Woods, Darren Jones, Paul Jolie, and a big happy birthday to Richard Lernstein and Martha Trout. Our patrons, Carmen, Laurie, Carrie-Anne, happy birthday, mate, Danielle, Sarah Markham, Sarah Camier, Dr. Jim, Katie, Lisa Mack, Anne-Marie, Susan P, Pedro, Mandy, Amanda H, Amanda V, David, Paul Buckley, Ella, Ryder, Tony, Erica, Abigail, Martin, Jim, Jackie, Sheila, Shannon, Brett, Suzanne, Laurel, Bard, Genevieve, Shelby, Manny, Laurie, Jill, Heidi, Paula, Lisa, Nancy, Juliet, Scott, Nanthia, Maria, Tracy, Vernon, Jamie, Diana, Stefan, Andrew, Georgie, Stephen, Keisha, Mark, Vernon, Mandy Jane, Nick, Sula, Amy, Diane, Paul P, Paul B, Alicia, Jay, John, Amberette, Kathy, Chantelle, Neil, Mary Ellen, and the Harmonic Wizard, and our new patron, Darren Joseph. And our special mentions are to Sue D, Joe Robbins, John A. Vink, Michael Spriggs, Glenn Davis, Paul Boozy, and Helen Kirkwood, who also has a birthday. Welcome to the podcast.
Wow, that list gets bigger. And thank you, Michael, for the introduction. I can't believe we've hit 10,000. I think we've actually doubled in 1 year. So thank you, everybody, for coming onto Facebook. You can help me with Instagram and X as well. But yeah, it's great to see everybody coming through. And so many people are interacting. If you go onto the Facebook page, which is at InXS Access All Areas podcast, there's so many comments on all the different posts we've been putting out. I think the last post we put down was, what's your favourite deep album track? And
yes,
some goodies there.
Look, when you put a question like that out there, all the socials go berserk, particularly X, you know, where I always see LS Hutchins or whatever there. And, you know, it seems to be a very common reply. But I think also, too, we just encourage, you know, when you do go onto sort of the Facebook page for, you know, the InXS Access All Areas page, you'll actually be sort of see so many other episodes that you can just sprinkle through like a catalogue. And, you know, sometimes we urge you, go back and have a look at some that you may have listened to 2-3 years ago because you probably forget our waffle, but you can rejoice in maybe some of the music or some of the information that we have gone through at the time. And as you've seen, B, we've had a few episodes sort of cross-pollinate, like our Danny Sabre one that sort of in a way had a link to the Michael solo stuff a little bit later. You know, even some references with Alex Proyas, you know, that had links to some other things that we did with the Kiss the Dirt versus To Look at You showdown. There are often things that will repeat themselves or theme-wise repeat themselves a little bit. So, yeah, encourage people to check the back catalogue out, Bea.
That's right. And we've got a lot of content now out there. I just want to give a big up to our new patron there, Darren Joseph. I think you heard me mention him at the very end there. Darren, thank you. He's come along and he's actually making some podcast wristbands. So if you're going to be going to one of the Don't Change gigs, I think it's going to be the one in Melbourne. He's coming all the way from Perth. He's yep. getting some made on our behalf. Bless him. What an absolute treasure. So not only a patron, but somebody who's really helping the cause and getting the message out that we're going to try and get InXS into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or help get them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for 2025.
Yeah, and again, another shout out to our friend in Adelaide who went to one of the Don't Change gigs, I think, B, and handed out a bunch of flyers for us there. Now, that gentleman was?
Andrew Everett.
Excellent, Andrew. Well done, mate. We really appreciate that. And also, too, you know, we've had quite a lot of emails over the last couple of weeks and episode suggestions, so definitely we're taking some of those on board. As people know, we're running a sort of a loose narrative. I joke to sometimes my friends that they say, "You still doing that podcast?" I go, "Yeah, it's taken us 179 episodes to get to 2001. So, yes, we are drawing this thing out, but there's so much to talk about, so we don't feel like we're drawing it out unnecessarily. So having said that...
Oh, sorry. Yep. I was going to say, because I'm uber excited to tell you this, Hayden. I don't know how we're going to work it out, but I'm uber excited. Well, actually, it's probably good that I'm now using a different platform that's not an online platform. It's more a software. So that will be good. I'll be able to take that away because I'm going to England for a month and I've just got my tickets to that.
Yay. Congratulations. So that's in May, I think. That's coming.
Yeah. So May. So I've got a couple of gigs straight away. As soon as I land, I've got a couple of gigs a couple of days after that are In Excess tribute bands. So I'm hoping to see more when I'm out there.
That's awesome. All right, Bea, well, we have a very interesting guest coming on a little bit later in this episode today. And what we can say is very, very unequivocally, this is the first time we've had a musical act come on who aren't really related to the band, you know, be it a band member or a producer or someone in the video side. It's a completely foreign band, albeit we did have the Soup Dragons come on, you know, your friend Sean.
Yeah, they supported them.
Yeah, they were another musical act supporting them. But this particular band really is diametrically a different genre to NXS, albeit have a certain sort of blended style like NXS do. But we have a gentleman called Frank from the Fun-Loving Criminals coming on today, okay? And we like to call him Frank or Uncle Frank, but his full name, B, is?
Yeah, his name's Frank Bambini.
And what a sweetheart and what a story he's got to tell. So we will get to him in a moment. But B, what's it time for?
Time for the news.
Hi, this is Sarah from Sydney. You're listening to In Excess, Access All Areas. And now it's time for the news.
All right, B, well, there's a chock-full Borough Encyclopedia version of news. I'm going to just bring it down to the key ticket items because we want to get to Frank as soon as we can today. But massive shout out to the Billboard Rock Charts. In Excess have stormed back into the charts, be it number 15 in the rock charts themselves for the Never Tear Us Apart song, which I guess a bit similar to the Kate Bush phenomenon last year with Stranger Things, probably a legacy of the ad that was on the Super Bowl. So come on, management. You know, Forbes.com have just got the great article out and highlighting INXS's first time they've appeared on this particular chart. And also, I approached INXS management and found out also from them that they've hit number 8 in the alternative digital charts as well at the same time.
What now, does that mean?
Well, it's just another category of charts. So there's about 15 charts there. The Billboard Rock Charts, they're number 15. The alternative digital charts is a different metric and a different categorization of music types. I think the rock charts, they're with a whole bunch of bands. The alternative charts with more alternate artists. But they're number 8 there. Unfortunately, Billboard charge $197 US a year for you to open up and see every chart at any given time, which is a bit of a rich thing, in my opinion, B. I explored the idea of the podcast investing that, but I thought it was a ripoff. Yes. So we will rely on anybody out there who has the Billboard charts in their entirety or has a subscription letting us know. But we do know, at least in the high ticket sort of media releases there, two big things that the band have achieved on the back of the Super Bowl. And again, we implore management to drive activity on that, you know, drive, you know, I guess awareness and milk of what it is. In the last couple of weeks, B, I did uncover an old episode in a publication called The Tennessean, probably in Tennessee, where Andrew did a big deep dive 2022 article in August of that year, and it's really, really good, so I encourage people to listen to that. Also on March the 6th, the final edition of All Juiced Up, Volume 4 to 6, has been released with a bunch of songs, so I think a lot of the band's social media pages, you'll see different remixes and different songs that are getting sort of highlighted, particularly on the website and things as well of the band. If you have got those or purchased those or have got any stories about them, feel free to engage. on all their platforms. Additional to that, B, I did see a couple of cool little YouTube sites. One was called In Excess Outtakes over the last couple of weeks, where there's some really cool stuff, some rarities, some live stuff, and some different things that are really available and haven't been around much. So,
what platform was that, Aidan?
It's In Excess Outtakes. I think it was YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Worst case scenario, just put in your search engine, and it'll come up. There's some great stuff there. And there was another one on YouTube called Patrol Nation. Episode 15 was on In Excess, which is sort of a generic podcast where they did an episode on In Excess in one of their catalogs recently. On a more sort of slight somber note, but an important note, B, March is Brain Awareness Month. Have you heard about that?
Yes, we did a big post on it right at the very beginning of March.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually went quite viral, so it was really good that everyone started sharing that.
Yeah, so we've been recorded since sort of, you know, probably the end of February. So, again, thank you for posting it out there. But, again, you know, we do know what Michael suffered from and what it sort of contributed to in the end. But, again, if you are in any way able to donate or give or just spread awareness on those things, fantastic. What I tend to do when I meet a slightly obnoxious or a sarcastic person goes, oh, Michael killed himself because of autoerotic fixation. Go, well, actually, no, he didn't. He had a brain injury. And I'd serve you well to maybe go do the research on it because that's what happened.
Yeah.
So I put people in their place when they say that. So.
Good, Hayden.
Thank
you. So should everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really one of the great legacies of Richard's documentary. I think that sort of put a lot of the scuttlebug to rest. Also, too, B, have you noticed the In Excess website? There's a lot of new merch and things released. They've got a few different sort of things out there. Have you been had a chance to look at that, share any information on that?
I've done a little bit on that. Yeah, we did. It's really strange, actually. Well, not strange, but Facebook do a thing where if you share stuff, it doesn't sometimes show. So yes. I might do another post where I just screenshot it and then put it on.
Don't they say the attachment's being pulled down because of...
No, they don't tell you off. It's just that there's some sort of algorithm on it. But I must admit, going to England, I think I'm going to get a hoodie. Because it's going to be a bit cold. So I'm going to get myself an In Excess hoodie. Yes.
Now, B, wouldn't be another news section without referencing the meaning behind In Excess songs. And there's a version of Suicide Blonde, what they think it means. So Google meaning of Suicide Blonde, you will probably laugh, but I do find them quite funny. Some are accurate, some are completely bizarre. Birthday-wise, shout out to friend of the program and pivotal figure to the band, Richard Lowenstein, who turned 65 recently, I think on the first week of March, maybe the 1st of March. He had a movie showing, I think literally yesterday, you know, compared to today's time of recording, where one or two of his old movies were being screened up at Northcote and had a bit of a Q&A and, fortunately, I couldn't get to it, but I believe it was a really big success. And, you know, kudos to Richard and what he's doing. Another little thing here. We've got a podcast out there called You, Me, and an Album. And there's an awesome one on The Swing, episode 82. It is 2 years old, but I only found it recently. But the album, you know, essentially is 40 years old now, which is really surprising. You know, The Swing's just turned 40. And this deep dive podcast on the episode called You, Me, and an Album, aka The Swing, goes for about 53 minutes. And it's a really great deep dive into the Swing album, so I encourage people to listen to that. Also, too, a friend of the band and a guy, a famous Hollywood actor who introduced the band on Saturday Night Live in 1991, Kevin Bacon. He does a little post called Kevin Bacon Blues Mondays, where he, you know, do a little sort of YouTube-y sort of Facebook thing where he interacts. And he talks about 90 seconds about songs and bands. He pulled out Elegantly Wasted and said, this is a band I really love. I introduced this band on In Excess, and this is a song I really love, which was Elegantly Wasted. So I think some of our socials have seen that posted. So thank you, Kevin. And you didn't introduce that song in 91. That song wasn't invented until 6 years later. But anyway.
I know. It's a bit weird that he said that, but anyway.
Yes, that's fine, yeah. And also to be a little bit sad one sort of in closing, a couple of, you know, well-known sort of artists, and I think one or two of these would resonate with you. Carr Wallinger, or Wallinger, depending how you pronounce it, from the Waterboys, you know, aka Hole the Moon. And then more notably he went into World Party, which they had some really big songs like Ship of Fools. And he wrote She's the One, which Robbie Williams stole and ripped off and claimed as his own. And Carl decided to ring up his manager and call him a fucking little C. Carl's a great singer, songwriter, composer. He unfortunately passed away at 66 yesterday. And also a couple of days ago, the great Eric Carmen, well known in the early days for being in the Raspberries, more famously known for Dirty Dancing, you know, with...
Hungry Eyes,
etc. there, and Lose Control. And probably most famous song is All By Myself, which was covered by Celine. You know, Eric was a great musician and a really, you know, really interesting story and catalogue, and inspired guys like Springsteen and Nirvana and different ones particularly from his power pop days with the Raspberries. He passed away at 74, which is always sad, losing icons who did something meaningful.
And another birthday that we've just missed off there is our beautiful Carrie Anne. We couldn't have done this without her. So congratulations on becoming another year.
Well, listen, Carrie Anne, we love you and what you do. And as I said, every March is Carrie Anne month. So well done to you. But that's the news of the week.
Hey, this is Tim Farris. Big shout out to Hayden and B. Also want to say hello to all the listeners and NXS fans. Thanks for listening. I love you, Hayden and B. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
Thanks, Ted. And now it's time for Topic of the Week.
Well, B, we're very excited today to be welcoming on to our topic today, Frank Bendini, who from the fun-loving Criminals, and albeit didn't join the band until a few years after they started, has been a very pivotal and long-time member of the band and quite influential on their music. He is a massive NXS fan. So for years, listeners out there who want to go, well, what's a guy from the fun-loving Criminals coming on? Well, one of our things to get the band in the Hall of Fame, will be NXS, is influence. And one of the great influences that NXS have had is other bands feeling that they can go out and play many styles and genres of music. And as you'll hear from an interview with Frank, we really explore that side of things. And, bands like the fun-loving Criminals, I think, as you sense, were inspired by NXS, going, well, we can be funky, we can be bluesy, we can be rock, we can, you know, have some spoken word rappy stuff. You know, we can have a pop side. There's no rules. And I think, again, that's one of the great legacies of NXS. So we shall throw to Frank and welcome aboard today. Well, OB, I'm going to let you invite our guest on today because we have probably, in the history of 177 episodes, got the most interesting invited guest we've ever had, because it's not specifically NXS related, but in a way it is. But we also are very excited to elaborate on this gentleman's career. So can you do the welcomes, B, and just maybe give a play-by-play how this came about?
Frank and I started talking on X, even though I still want to call it Twitter. It's pretty hard to not call it Twitter still. And I saw your photo pop up of your dressing room. Now, Frank is with the Fun Loving Criminals and he's over in Australia at the moment doing a national tour. Where were you actually, Frank, when you took the photo? In Melbourne? No.
In Gold Coast, a place called Miami. It was a club down there, the Triffid, I think it's called the Triffid. So any sound check and stuff, so we make a beeline for the dressing room just to make sure the ice and the drinks are in there before we do anything. I opened the door and on the back of the door was just this amazing NXS and NXS's career. So obviously that was a great feeling to know that the owners of the Triffid had honoured NXS with like a whole piece, because also in the dressing room is like every Bluesfest poster, posters of artists that have gone into that venue and played, but NXS had their own
door.
complete door, which they kind of moved off on the door and kind of went off. Like,
wicked. Oh, wow. So I reposted your door of NXS and I said, this is fantastic, Frank. And then you messaged me going, get NXS to come and see us. And then, we messaged Tim and Tim said, oh, I'd love to grab Scooby snacks and come along, but he couldn't make it. And then I was like, who else can I get? And then he says, oh, we're all really busy, we can't make it. But they sent so much love to you guys. I mean, you know, they sort of same era in a way that you were around, you know, back in the 90s with that song Scooby Snacks. I mean, that was just so cool. And they did Glastonbury. But you didn't actually join them until 2003, is that right?
Yeah, I joined 2003 and then I was with them for like a few years before on the road doing DJing and bits and bobs in the studio. So I've actually been part of the band for the best part of 25 years, but touring in the band third as a songwriter and as the drummer for 21 years.
Yeah. Wow. Burn.
It was so cool that you reached out because, you know, when we got down here, we got an Australian tour manager and the first thing they said, do you know any of NXS? And he just looked at me like, I wasn't expecting that, you know. And I said, because if you do, can you invite them down to the show? Which I don't know where the guys live, but I know that we're pretty much hitting every major town in Australia. So I figured they might one of the members might be at one.
You know, have you done Sydney on your dates yet or not?
Yeah, we did Sydney, Brian. We've got Canberra, we've got Melbourne, we've got Perth, we've got Adelaide. We've got them four left.
Yeah, it's, look, I think two of the guys live in sort of the northern beaches of Sydney. One of them lives up near Byron Bay. One lives out near Tamworth, out in the country sort of area. And one lives in LA. So, Gary, the bass player, lives in LA.
He got it is, yeah.
Plus, he, you know, his wife is from California and, you know, he's been over there for nearly 20 years, really predominantly.
And he's got his own band now called Ash and Moon.
Yes, yes.
Right. But you should check out the basses. What's it called, Hayden? He's done the I can't remember. It was all that technical.
I think it's GGB basses, I think, after his initials. But he,
yeah.
Look, you go online, plug it in, and he's quite an aficionado on the bass itself and the design and creating different sort of, you know, sonics on them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely check that out. And that, but, you know, years and years ago, we were on the same TV show in the UK. Well, Michael's there. It was a Chris Evans TV show.
TF on a Friday? That got here.
Oh, was you there in 97, you say?
Yeah, I was just down there as a guest. And yeah, but both bands were there. And there was talk with management years ago of Fun Loving Criminals and In Excess going on tour together, which is something that the band were like, we were super excited about. It never happened, unfortunately. But we always thought an awesome kind of mix, you know what I mean? Like, and that's why when I come back to TV, I said, tell Tim, if they ever reform, which they absolutely should, but if they ever did that, that we have to be the opening band.
We will pass it on. And I think it's interesting because if I could give my experience to Fun Loving Criminals, you know, I was 24, 25, and, you know, obviously 1995, 96 was a big, you know, time for the band with three or four hit singles. I mean, there's not many songs where a band sort of put their eponymous name in a song and it's cool. Like having Fun Loving Criminals in the moniker of a song is dangerous, but it worked when, you know, you hear like Backstreet Boys, you know, name check themselves. It ain't cool. But the Fun Loving Criminals had a cool name checking of themselves. And I remember watching them going, these guys have fun in their videos. They're socially aware. They've got a comedy element to them. They're a slightly more positive Beastie Boys with, you know, a little more versatility with, you know, maybe some of the sonics and, you know, the hybrid sound that you had, you know, than the Beasties maybe had. I mean, you know, going back and just doing a bit of, you know, deep dive, I mean, you've got cellos in clips, you've got brass, there's so many really quite cool melting pot of instruments that the band, you know, over their journey have used.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the, it can hinder you. You can't pigeonhole Fun Loving Criminals, which can murder you, especially in somewhere like the States where everything has to be rock or it has to be R&B or it's got to be hip hop and it goes out on them certain stations. But so it's a bit of a nightmare for people that work our records because they don't really know where to place at the best of time. But, you know, for the last 21 years, it's something that me and Fast we speak about a lot, and that is integrating all the kind of music that floats our boats. Well, I grew up with my mum and dad, who just got the best record collections ever. My dad was more rock, you know, he was the Queen, the Led Zeppelin, all them kind of bands. And then my mum had more of a black exploitation. She had the Sardes, she liked the R&B, she liked the reggae. And so from a very early age, I was mishmashing styles, you know. And then at a very young age, I discovered Prince, who's my absolute, you know, hero. And so he was a master of also integrating rock, that 80s sound, that funk, which then led me to getting into In Excess, even from the early days, you know, like 82 with Shabu album, which is awesome, which has got one of my favourite In Excess songs on Don't Change. And then all the way through. But it's funny because there's been certain songs over the last 21 years, especially with my band Uncle Frank, where we'll reference In Excess when we're in the studio. You know, we'll say, like, there's a song that we did called Step Into My Room, and I really wanted Tim's kind of sound, that kind of jangly funk. You hear in Prince with Kiss. It's very similar.
You hear it in the Fine Young Cannibals Drive Me Crazy too, don't you?
As well, yeah.
Yeah, great song. That band's very annoying to when you get this. pissed off people coming up to us at the end of the night.
I didn't quite connect the connection with the similar names, I understand. Yeah, right.
We've had that for many years. But no, it's, you know, with the mishmash of styles, I think in excess also had that, you know, with the great songwriting from.
Yes, they couldn't be pigeonholed either.
No, I mean, they always have rock. So sexy and appealing to musicians to, you know, have that sound. But at the same time, they wrote amazing ballads, wrote amazing love songs. They would mishmash the styles up. And that was always something where we thought, oh, you know, if we went on tour, the audience would just have the best experience. Yes, they get funk, they get an element of hip hop and blues and rock and roll from us to warm them up while they're having drinks. Then in excess, come on and absolutely smash it. And then I can do a quick change, come at the side of the stage and watch John play drums, and I'll be very happy.
Oh, you'd be a happy boy then.
Super excited for that.
That sounds like a dream.
I know, but yeah, what a band. I mean, it's super cool for you guys, because I could talk. I've got some great stories about NXS, and even leading up to our last record, you know, I'll turn to Naeem, who's the guitarist in Uncle Frank and Full of Incriminals now, and I'll say, make it a bit more NXS, and he knows exactly what I mean. That's like a true like accolade to a great band when you don't even have to make
shorthand, isn't it? It's like shorthand.
Yeah. And this is great for our podcast because we're trying to help get INXS into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And you being influenced by them and many other bands, this really helps the cause. So for you to come on and say how much INXS means to you as a musician and to that it's actually, you know, helped you with your music all through these 21 years of being with Fun Loving Criminals. This is fantastic. We can't wait. But now I'll just say, sorry, Hayden, I'm taking over. I'm very excited. Sorry. Right. I'll try and calm down.
You're right.
But
please don't want Hayden.
Well, no,
she's right. She's British. She's British.
Well, this is what I was going to say. So I didn't know there was a guy from Leicester in the Fun Loving Criminals. I thought you were a New York band and you were very American. So tell us, how on earth did you get into the band?
Well, do you want the true story of when I first met them, or shall I make it a bit more PC?
Tell us
the truth.
I'm adulterated here.
I went to Rock City, which is an amazing music venue in England, in Nottingham. And I discovered Fun Loving Criminals quite early on, before they'd had any hits or anything. The music was on the background of the basketball program. It used to be on Channel 4 on Sunday mornings. And I heard this piece of music. This is wicked. And this is before the internet and before you could just ask Siri or whatever. And so I actually wrote to Channel 4 and said, there was a piece of music that you wrote. And some nice person wrote me back and said, these are the four songs that we used in the TV show. So I looked down and I listened to them, and then I found it, and it was from the Criminal. So when I saw that they were playing at Rock City, I went, but just before I left, a friend of mine who owns Rock City rang and said, we've got this band from New York. They're looking for some weed. Can you bring some over from Leicester? And I was like, yeah, of course.
Perfect.
So I took some weed on. I knocked on the dressing room door. And the first guy that answered was Fast, who's been my music partner now for 21, coming up to 22 years. And that's how we first met. And then it transpired that I was DJing that night, and I just took a load of old school hip-hop. And I was downstairs in room two and they were playing in room one. So I went up, watched the show, went down, got beyond the DJ booth. They all come out and then they just hung and we just became friends. And then it was pretty rapid. I was in an English band at the time called Baby Genius, and we were over in New York making an album. And we were in the studio the same week. This is mind-blowing. Bearing in mind that, you know, I'm pretty young at that time. And I'd done quite a bit of stuff in Europe with an old hip-hop band called Can't Sleep. So I got a massive love for hip-hop music. And I was over in New York making a record. So I'd only done a little bit. I'd probably have classed myself as semi-professional musician back then. So I was still having to hold down some bullshit warehouse jobs and stuff like that while I was kind of honing my craft. Then I joined this band in England, and then they took us over to America. to make an album in the studio called Quad Studios, which is right in Manhattan. And it was so surreal, I can't tell you, because we went in on day one, met the producer, met the engineer. There's only three of us that traveled from Leicester, all pretty wet behind the ears. And we're in our studio. And the stories just start coming out. And we're like, oh, sorry, you like hip hop music? Yeah, yeah. This is the studio where they thought Biggie Smalls had shot Tupac in the doorway. And I was like, holy shit, this is that studio. They were like, yeah. And then my next question was, has Queen or Led Zeppelin ever record? Oh yeah, this is the room where Roger Taylor sat. So I'm like freaking out. Oh my God. You know, that's where John Bonham used to sit. So I was sitting in John Bonham's chair every day, you know, and all this crazy shit. And then I'm there one day, and then like Coldplay walk by making their second album. And then Paul McCartney walks in, makes a coffee. Is that all right, mate? You know, and I was like, holy shit. And then the Fun Loving Criminals come in, and they knew that we'd flew over to make a record in this studio, and they were doing some bits and bobs downstairs. And one day their drummer didn't turn up, and they called me, do you want to come down and get on the drums? And so I get on the drums and kill this song in one take. And they were just like, holy shit, you know. And then a few months later, they asked me to join the band.
That's a great story, Frank.
That's
brilliant. And you say that John Farris was one of your top drummers that you idolised.
Going back, like, my parents bought me my first, like, Fisher-Price with Hayden. I don't know if you had Fisher-Price.
Fisher-Price, Mattel, all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. So it was a little toy drum kit. There's pictures of me at 3 years old behind this drum kit, which apparently my mum says I killed it in 3 hours. And they were like, oh, we need to get him a real one, you know. And so I started playing drums, and then I joined the Bush Brigade, so I used to play side sled during all the marches. This was about early 80s. As I then moved into, I met a friend, and I always used to say, I'd love to start a band. And he was like, well, I play drums. And I was like, yeah, well, I play drums, I'm the drum. And he was like, well, I can only play drums, you can sing. So why don't I be the drummer and you can sing? And I was like, okay. So in the back of the garden, in a shed, and it must have been around 1985, I think. So I was listening to Listen Like Thieves, and I was hearing the drums. So I was trying to play the beats that were on, you know, them songs on the album, was trying to get with the beats. So John has been with the Frank a long time. But then it was like obviously seeing the big stuff off the Kick album. It's like you can watch a perfect film. So a pretty recent film, Maverick, you know, Top Gun 2, I would class that as a perfect film. It's pretty much perfect. If anything, it's better than Top Gun 1.
It's much better. Yeah.
I haven't watched it. Oh, I gotta watch it.
Oh, it's there. You gotta get on it.
Yeah. It was on point. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was excellent. Kick is a perfect album. You don't skip a track. You don't get bored of hearing them songs. It's no surprise. I think there's a statistic that said some between 1987 and 1989, apparently every household in the UK had that album in their house. I've heard that. It's meant to be a fact.
That's just giving me tingles hearing that someone say that.
It's true. And that, the videos from that, I mean, Mike was such a dude. Like, it was, you know, everything. I used to try and grow my hair long in the bob back then and try and emulate how he looked and wear the coat with the collars up. And, you know, in my head, I thought I was him, but clearly it wasn't. But in my head, it was like, you know, I want to be Mike Litchens is such a dude, but it's just, this is why your podcast and stuff like this is amazing. You know, Prince, there's a couple of podcasts out there for Prince. I just think they're like history channels. huge. And it's like you have to keep it going because these bands and these musicians that have either stopped playing or lost a lead singer or, you know, a solo artist like Prince has passed away. It's very important to keep it in the vision for other bands coming through because there's so much shit around this days that you can't learn off shit music or, you know, everybody's a producer now. Anybody that's got an Apple Mac is a producer. It's like...
Yeah, and
you're not.
If you look at the instrumentation, I mean, for you guys particularly, you know, live music, let's just look at that as an example. In Excess, you know, as our listeners would know, probably played 1,000 gigs in Australia before they even went overseas. You know, 400 or 500 of them within, like, I think they played 400 gigs in 18 months in WA alone, going in the outback, you know, cattle stations and all sorts of things to learn their craft. And one of the things, you know, I guess with instrumentation, and I know Andrew in his latest sort of, you know, solo days, is just the simple organicness and sound of a traditional banjo, a guitar, a snare, and versus Pro Tools and, you know, vocoders and all these different trickeries seem to permeate the industry nowadays. And if you can't play live, you know, there's a lot of studio acts out there, or, you know, wizardry acts out there who can't play live. And I think the live playing is a testimony, obviously, for your band, but in Excess as well, because that's where you earn the trust from the fans, I think.
In Excess, you know, I'm sure, like, there's a lot of In Excess fans from the Kick era, but you think they're so prolific. I think they did something like 12 or 13 studio albums, I think, if my memory serves me right. Then you just think about that for a minute. 12 or 13 studio albums. I think they've had a bunch of compilations. They've had the live albums from, you know, the Wembley one, which was amazing. There's another interesting story. I was in Air Studios in London working with the producer on something we were doing. I can't remember what it was. And I just happened, we were having a break, and I just happened to say, oh, what stuff have you done? You know, anything cool that you've done that? I'm like, no. Anyway, yeah, I mixed the live at Wembley in Excess. I was like, holy shit. And then I just spent the rest of the night talking to him about it. Yes, you know what I mean? Which was really funny. I do remember, I've got to tell, I think I left the story for you, but can I tell the story?
Yeah.
And I met the band when I was pretty young.
Yeah.
So they played twice in my hometown. I think they played in 86. Okay, he's on it. Thank you. they played in 93, I think it was.
Two.
Right. Was it? Okay. And I remember you could only get the tickets from the High Street of Leicester, from HMB. And I had to go down, my girlfriend at the time, who's now a wife, absolutely adored Michael, just adored him, like most women. And I was like, so she said, you've got to go and get tickets. Now, at the time, I wasn't even in I was barely in my first band, so no one knew me. Now, if I need a ticket in Leicester, I pick the phone up, boom, I'm on every guest list. It's not a problem for Frank. Back then, I didn't know anybody. So I had to queue up. So I went down with a sleeping bag the night before. There was a queue all the way up the High Street. And I sat there freezing. I was third in line. So I was third from the first person. So I knew I was getting a ticket. That helped me get through the night because it was fucking freezing. And then even though it was the summer, nighttime, it's cold. Got my tickets and we went to the show. There was like, it's a theatre. So it's got like old people that work in it, you know what I mean? Like, they're not young and security and all that. They're old people that are used to putting pantomimes on or you know, it's kind of like that. So I said to this woman, I says, I just chanced it. I was with my girl at the time, who's just my girlfriend, and I was like, I says, oh yeah, we're working in here. Can I just go in? And she just opened the door. Yeah, of course. So I was in. This is like 2 hours before the show's going to start, and I was just said, let's just walk around until we get kicked out. I've got the tickets in the back pocket, we'll be fine. So we walked down the side and there's catering. And I've turned and the bass player's walked out, Gary Beers. He's gone, g'day, you all right? You know? And I was like, yeah, cool. You're here for the show. I was like, yeah, great. Next person that walked out was Michael. Well, the girl just... Oh.
God, best boyfriend ever.
Yeah.
Frank, was she still your girl in 5 minutes' time? Or?
She was, but Michael walks out with a bottle of Corona that was half drunk. And he said, "Hey, dear, what's your name?" And I said, "It's like, really nice to meet you. Look forward to the show." Yeah, yeah. And then I kind of stepped aside, and then Lisa was there, my girl, and he shrieked, like Corona, shrieked, and he just gave the bottle of Corona to Lisa, gave her a kiss on the cheek, and said, "Enjoy the show."
What a charmer.
And my wife still has that bottle. Now, it's with our ticket from 93 coiled inside the bottle.
Oh.
We've moved out like 4 times since then, and she's always like, she gets it, you know. But Michael did one of the illest, coolest things that I've ever seen a frontman do. And it's just say if that's right, because Prince has done some pretty amazing stuff, but As far as being an ultimate like player and charisma, and you know, they're in the middle of this set, can't remember the song, and the band are playing, and it's an epic show. It's super loud, whole place is vibing. There's the microphone in the middle of the stage, and he walks away from the microphone. Now, this is an old school theatre that has a balcony, and that balcony comes all the way around. Pretty much, if you're in the corner, you're looking down on stage.
Yeah.
So back in them days, the PA, and he walks away from there, and he goes to the rig, and he starts climbing. Or tour manager and people were freaking out. As if he'd have fell, he'd have broke his back. But he's climbed up this speaker set, and he's jumped into the balcony and systematically gone all the way around the balcony. I mean, the band must have been playing for about 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Instrumentally, and he's gone all the way around, and he's climbed down the other speaker stack and jumped on the stage. But what he did as he walked round was he kissed and snogged as many girls as he went all the way. And it was just like, it was so funny because you could see the boyfriends just going, "Oh, okay, go on." And I know, you know what I mean? And they're just like, look away like that. But it was just like, I'm sitting there thinking, you are the coolest motherfucker I've ever seen. Like, it was just so badass, you know what I mean? And he jumped on the stage, grabbed the mic, and the band was straight on the
straight kick. Back in.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we love you, Michael. Yeah.
I think I could see the lip syncing of the words "hall pass." going all around the balcony, hall pass by the female.
But going back to you being sort of backstage before the show and then all of that, that's pretty cool, mate. That's awesome.
It is pretty cool. And then I think someone probably at Cora.
What was that venue? Do you remember the venue name again?
De Montfort Hall. I'm sure it was 93. De Montfort Hall.
I think
it died here.
Yeah, it is. They didn't play in UK 92. They played in 93, did a small club pub thing.
Yeah.
Because they were basically road testing Full Moon Dirty Hearts, and they did a small thing in Australia. But it was very much like 1,000 tickets here only, limited edition, boutique type events, yeah.
Hayden, this was a tiny place for them to play, stadium band, and this holds just under 2,000, I think 1,800. So that's why it was, they only did the ticket outlet at the certain places within the cities. That's why you had to queue up the night before to get them. But it was absolutely an electrifying. It was the hottest ticket. There was people outside trying to buy tickets, and they just couldn't do it. But it was fantastic. But I tell that story about Michael, but at the same time, every single person within that band, Hayden, is like masterful. And what I love about NXS the most is, as a band with so many members in it, I don't know if it's Andrew's doing. Sometimes I think it might be Kirk. I don't know. They have a very good way of not being afraid to use space within certain songs. Now, you listen to a lot of songs nowadays, the minute it starts, lyrics, right from there, all the way to the end, bam, that's finished, the song's finished. And it's like, where's the musicality? Where are you letting it breathe? Where's the melody?
And that would be Andrew.
3 weeks ago, we did an interview with Alex Proyas. Now, you might know Alex's work. He directed the movie The Crow.
Yeah.
I was Brandon Lee. He did I, Robot for Will Smith. But he was the guy who initially got his start in Australia with NXS's Kiss the Dirt film clip. Yeah, so that song is quite a spacious song. It sort of down, 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 stops at a breeze, and then it climbs, and it is exactly, I think, the epicentre of what you're saying, you know, with the space in the songs, you know?
Even stuff from the early albums, like this, listen, like These and Original Sin, some of the songs, it's like they're not scared, like Let It Breathe a little bit. The musicality then shines through, you know. Kurt, amazing. I watch videos back sometimes, and I watch what he's doing. And his versatility with the backing vocals, with jumping on the sax with them. Sick guitar, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Tim, obviously, he's a dude. He's a rock and roll dude. You know what I mean? He's just got that rock and roll stance, flinging the arm round stuff to that, you know, really good. John is just killer snare sounds ever, if you go back and listen to some of the albums. I'd love to sit, buy him dinner, and just talk fucking drums with him. He'd probably hate it.
He'd love it.
Well, he's such a craftsman. I think he came up with a lot of electronic stuff and technology stuff with the drums, particularly around Suicide Blonde, that innovated a lot of the next 90s movements with drum playing. Yeah. But if I could drill down on sort of three or four or five songs that you would sort of say, okay, you and your partner, wife, you're on the desert island, you've got to take two or three each. What songs resonate with you over their body of work that fit that criteria?
I thought you might ask me that, and it's really a really difficult one. Hayden, son of a bitch. I only really can play two songs well on the piano, and I'd probably take them too, which is Mystify and Never Tear Us Apart. I can play really well on the piano, and I'm not a pianist. So I love them songs that much that I sat there as a young kid and taught myself how to play them on the piano.
Right.
So I love them two songs, but one of my favourites is What You Need. What a tune. Oh, my God. Right. And then the other one, which is what they used to kick a lot of their tours up with, is Guns in the Sky. It's just sick. And the video is sick. I don't know whether or not you know this between the two of your knowledge, but is that a really, really, really long corridor, or is it one corridor that it just keeps...
I can give you the answer to this. Richard Lowenstein was doing effectively the New Sensation clip and Never Tear Us Apart, both in Prague. So New Sensation is the one on the balcony. They're outside. You can see the fog in Michael's vocal he's delivering and the sort of the lit up lights and things, that's in Prague on a balcony. Never Tear Us Apart's around the beautiful landscape of Prague. Guns in the Sky was an example of Richie going, we might as well just do this thing in 30 minutes. Everyone was a bit drunk. They did the same corridor, did the same things. I think famously the lift doors were closing on John's head, or was one of his head. It was passed out. It was a knock around video whilst they were there. But it has a charm to it, doesn't it?
It does. It's like the energy of it and the timing of it. It's like BL on the drum beat every time through the door. It's like really, really well done. But I always thought, is it one really, really long corridor?
Or is it the same corridor?
They just keep resetting the shots or that. So thank you for clearing that up for me. I've always wondered. That's amazing. But I would say What You Need, Guns in the Sky, Mr. Fire, Never Tear Us Apart. One of my all-time favourites is Don't Change. And I love that because it's on one of the first records. And it's still, to this day, now.
We'll let him have six, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Don't Change's got to be in there. Now, Frank, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast, but that's actually our intro as well that we play into every time we do a podcast. Our ultimate song. And I think it's probably the most that all the bands have played, haven't they?
Yeah, I think as a cover song.
Cover song, sorry.
Here's what I look at. I'd say Over the Journey, Don't Change is the most covered song, probably Never Tear Us Apart second.
Mm.
But I think what Don't Change resonates across the people who have covered it and played it is the weird spectrum of artists who like it. Now, the fact that obviously Fun Loving Criminals love it says something. I think that gothic band AFI, they cover it, okay? Yeah. We got a folk band in Australia called the Audreys who covered it. You got Everclear who've covered it. You've got Bruce Springsteen's played it live and covered it.
That's awesome.
In Sydney with Tommy Morello.
It is awesome. You've got to go watch that. Google that.
Yeah. 2014, Sydney.
Guitars, whoa.
You've got Tommy Morello, Little Stevie and Bruce playing the three lots of guitars with it. live in Sydney. You've got an Australian band called Grinspoon, a sort of a punk pop band who covered. I mean, it's really crossed a lot of borders and things like that in terms of the variety of people who've covered that song, you know?
I think what it is it's kind of in a way, well, you think it is until you attempt to cover it. But you think it's pretty much meat and potatoes, you know, it's like ding 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 pretty much that until the end, towards the end when it does this bit's like, oh shit, didn't think about this bit when I decided to do this song. It's just got a really stomp in energy about In Excess. I tried to keep the Uncle Frank version pretty much the same because if it ain't broke, no, fix it. And it was just like me and Naeem from Uncle Frank and from Lovin. We love In Excess and we love the guitar of In Excess. I love the sound that Tim brought. Put those tiny daggers in your heart. Put those tiny daggers in your heart. Put those tiny daggers.
So wonderful. I really love that you love them so much. We're seeing you just with your door, and then the door's been opened in a way of knowing that how much they've meant to you. Do you think it's influenced a lot for your music going forward now? What's going on with Fun Loving Criminals after this tour?
Well, I mean, it's been difficult 2 years because we kind of fell out. The original singer left the band. And so we've been building it back up for 2 years, and I brought the fantastic guitarist and one of my oldest friends, Naeem, from Uncle Frank, which is a band we've had for over 20 years, that covered Don't Change. We put two new EPs out, and we'll be working on some new stuff in the future for Lovett. But we just brought out an album called Diablo with Uncle Frank. And whenever I start a record in the studio, I have a whiteboard, and me and Naeem, and at the top of the whiteboard, we'll put the bands that we've been listening to the most that we're really feeling. So on Diablo's whiteboard, which I still haven't wiped off yet, even though the album only come out just at the end of the year, still in the studio. Been on tour that much, I'm not a chance to get back in my studio. But the whiteboard now, when I get back, I'll take a photo and send it to you, B, on the thing. Because at the top, it says, Rival Sons, this is who I've been listening to late there that have influenced me to start writing music. Yeah. Rival Sons, Lenny Kravitz, In Excess, Clutch. You ever heard of Clutch?
I've heard of that, yeah.
They're like a rock band. They are the influences for that record that we've just put out just at the end of last year. And In Excess is still there in 2023, and I'd still reference that band. That's how fantastic.
What's really interesting there, you mentioned Lenny Kravitz and In Excess. Now, have you heard Lenny Kravitz's latest single?
Yes.
Have you heard the similarity?
To me, it's got a bit of a new sensation vibe about it. It's got a little bit, especially his like delivery, but what do you think it sounds?
It's Suicide Blonde Part 2.
Okay, yeah, I heard.
Yeah.
I've only heard it once.
You go play it a couple of times. I think Lenny knew Michael, and just a little anecdote, Michael went to see Lenny in France when Mike had a house in the south of France, and famously sort of, you know, went to see Lenny play down in the south of France, and then went backstage and met Lenny. And before you know it, I think he invited Lenny over for Christmas dinner, or, you know, for at least dinner at the house with his family. And you know, again, part of that era. And Michael was such a charmer. You know, he really loved music and loved other artists. He was always very supportive of them. And he was always listening and looking ahead of what was going on. And he famously said, which is in reference to your earlier point, that you get a sound like In Excess because we grew up listening to Aretha Franklin and Led Zeppelin on the same radio station. And as you said, with the Fun Loving Criminals, you know, the US label, ironically, are a New York sort of outfit originally, but their huge success has really been the UK and Australia, hasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
And in Europe.
Dropping the pond over in the States. But I feel like, you know, with Fun Loving Criminals, it was packaged up in that kind of New York, Sopranos-y, gangster-y, De Niro-y kind of vibe. And the rest of the world, buy into that and they absorb it and it entertains them. Where middle America is so racist and just why I listen to country music or whatever, that they didn't get it. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, with that particular band being FLC, we're more of an export, you know what I mean, into other countries.
I think there's a humour, there's a sense of humour the band have that's, and I don't want to belittle how American listeners, not at all, but I think it's the record companies who don't back audiences sometimes enough to take in new content, because every so often America breaks these artists that are fantastic and you go, gee, you know, the record company took a real risk on them. There's enough people there for risks to be taken. You know, it's such a wide, you know, gamut of people. But the UK particularly and Australia have a certain sense of humour, and even the Canadians probably as well. But I think audiences seem to get the fun-loving criminal shtick, you know?
Yeah, goofiness as well. I love it.
Yeah. And the videos, your videos are so funny.
So great. Yeah.
Take yourselves too seriously.
No.
You could see when the band...
I mean, the video for Loco, you know, to me is...
I was just going to say,
yeah, you know, on the beach, and it's sort of a bit like the Love Boat meets Pacino movie, Say Hello to My Little Gun, you know.
Oh yeah.
Scarface, yeah. It's, you know, they're like these little montage, you know, film clips, and
they are. We haven't done one for a while. We need to do another one because we've just put out two new EPs that we've been touring on. The second EP we're about to, once we leave Australia, we've got a tour on our Capistrano EP. Which was the last thing that came out a few months back. And we should do a bit, but videos, they're a pain in the bum.
Was it Loco where you said, let's go over to Australia or something?
Well, they were on tour then. You know,
oh.
Well, one of the videos, I was just coming into the scene just after they did that video.
Right.
Which is insane. When you go back and look at that video, it was a lot of fun to be on a boat with 20 beautiful...
Could you imagine? I think even I would have liked that.
Hello.
Mackie, this is the president. I need you guys to go to Australia and stop this guy. Please put Fast on the phone.
Hello.
Large?
Stand by.
Hello.
Yo.
Yes, sir.
We need you now. You're our only hope. We're screwed, boys. Screwed.
Thanks, listeners. That's the end of part one. You can have a little refreshment break, a little nap, a stop, and then when you're ready, turn over to part two, because we've got some fantastic further insights with Frank. We will really share his musicianship and his love for NXS, and also Prince. Can't wait to hear more from that.